The views expressed in our episodes are ours alone and do not represent any other organizations. Our episodes discuss internet crimes against children and cases that involve the exploitation of children and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, we don't want to do anything to scare your children. That's the last thing we want to do. We don't want to scare anybody.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Brandon. How are you?
I'm peachy. How are you?
Fabulous. Welcome, everybody, to Catfish Cops. We have a, maybe a special episode today.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for listening. It's been a good launch week. We've had a lot of, We've had a lot of positive feedback, a lot of good questions, a lot of good promotion and help in spreading the word about the podcast.
And we couldn't do it without all the listeners, that's for sure, because they have been sharing and liking and following and rating and writing reviews and all kinds of like very cool stuff for us, all at our request, of course.
Well, and without them, we're just what we normally are, just two guys that sit and talk to each other, to ourselves, right?
Very true point. Very true point.
So we were on a live YouTube podcast this week.
Yep.
And what we saw are a lot of questions and a lot of parents saying, oh, this is really good information. We've heard from parents saying, you know, I never knew this was a problem, or maybe they knew, but they didn't think it was as widespread.
Well, and out of fairness, like we field a lot of questions also because we teach a lot. Like we go to lots of different groups. Schools and teachers, administrators and churches and different congregations and whoever will listen to us peel the paint off the wall as we speak at great lengths. And so we often get lots and lots and lots of Q&A after our presentations, our safety presentations and whatnot. And so I think conversely, we see the same as we did the live deal the other night or whatever night that was. And as we've progressed, you know, through our social media platforms. So what have we brought today?
Today is a discussion of those questions and those topics that we talk about quite a bit with parents. So we're going to give some parental advice on safety for your kids online and social media and stuff like that. This episode is going to hopefully talk to you about the what to do and what not to do. We're going to give you a hypothetical situation that we see occur quite a bit.
Yes.
We're going to discuss some of the ways to go about handling that. And this is certainly not all encompassing. We have tons of things, but this just came out of those talks that we have with private groups or parent groups when we teach that kind of stuff. And oftentimes this is what we're asked.
And we want to, you know, we kind of want to set the expectation where you as the listener, if you're a parent, you obviously may have some concerns depending on what age your kids are. And I guess I want to just like toss in there and make sure that today's episode is really going to be geared about what to do surrounding the hypothetical we're going to put out. And so obviously in your own homes, your own lives, dependent on what information comes to you, if whatever happened is so problematic that you need immediate assistance, and clearly we would advise call 911.
Yep.
Get the cops there as quickly as you can to resolve whatever is going on.
Sometimes people feel uncomfortable calling 911, right?
Yeah.
And now, we're not saying like don't use 911 as your personal, you know, service to fix everything in life.
Right.
But certainly if there's an emergency or something that you encounter that needs an immediate police response, 911 is the way to go.
And so I know that we discussed leading up to this, but I had given a small example because I've seen this in my tenure of working where they have, or there's a picket male or female child,
13-year-old boy or girl.
Right. Okay. And they have either been engaged in some sort of online romance with someone, and that romance has led to whether the parents know about it or not, most oftentimes not.
Right.
And so it's developed over some time, and the 12 or 13 year old male or female has developed feelings. And the next thing you know, someone has snuck into the house through the window of this child.
Yeah.
And a parent maybe hears something, investigates, opens the door, and
there's this
stranger
in there
that they've never seen.
Now, we're going to say that it's an offender that is probably going to be a male. And the reason we say that is not because we have some bias against male, but that statistically, most of our offenders are male.
Now, we do have some situations where females are offenders.
But they're
Far and few between. Yeah, they're rare. They're far and few between. And the experience I have with them will be coming up in future episodes. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. So, okay, so you maybe the person doesn't sneak in. Maybe they're just asking for pictures and content that's graphic and right. nude. And how to handle that. So that's what today is. We're going to kind of just throw out that hypothetical. You've come across this, and your child is communicating in a sexual manner with someone that is much older and unknown to you, and you're just finding out about it as a parent. Now right. what?
I think for the most part, we're going to start with maybe a list of what not to do, because that in itself is probably a better place to begin. And so the first thing I would say is immediately when something like that is discovered, my experience is the parent panics and freaks out. Understandably, that's going to happen. What I would just advise parents, as much as you want to do the freak out mode on the child and barrage them with questions, as things are taken up from them, like their phones and other devices, is to temper that if you can, because that's obviously not going to get you as far as you would like to go.
Temper that for sure, because as you've heard us talk before in previous episodes, there is most likely quite a bit of grooming going on.
Yeah.
So your child may feel like they love this person
right.
or they are in a relationship with this person.
And that's the shock that I think, as I've discussed with many parents who have been in that situation, can't grasp. And so they have this lose their shit moment on the kid or the spouse or the siblings or the, you know, this venting, screaming, upset. And while that could be warranted at some level, our advice would be to try to temper that if you can on some level.
And why? So, like, think about this. Your child, what if your child believes that they are in a relationship with this person, that they are in love? Or as we see sometimes happens, that this offender may have told your child that they're the same age or they're only a year or two in age difference. And so the kid may be believing that this, you know, 30-year-old male or 40-year-old male is actually a 13-year-old boy or girl.
That's true.
And that they're having a relationship. Also, a reason not to panic and flip out on the kiddo is because they're already probably going to go through a lot of feelings and emotions when this comes out. A lot of shame, I'm sure, a lot of embarrassment and regret. And what we don't want is to put them into a spiral of just shutdown, because
right.
we're going to need information. And also we're going to need them to be advocated for so that they can go into
right.
Therapy and services that can hopefully bring them back to a sense of wellness. Right.
Yeah. And for one aspect of that is that from the parent side of the house, if your child has never really experienced anything, something like that, that could be very life altering and traumatic, they haven't done really anything wrong. Maybe they have done things that you don't condone or agree with, or what we would agree with, but because of the process that got them there, you know, it's a mixed bag of emotions for them. And so
they are ultimately the victim, right?
Absolutely. And that's the way they'll be treated. So that it leads us to, okay, I'm not having that, you know, lose my mind moment. I'm going to kind of temper my feelings. I'm scared. I'm upset. What do I do? The first and foremost thing I would tell you to do is do not delete anything that you found. if in our example, you have a 12 or 13 year old boy or girl where you've discovered this and those images of your own child are on there, a parent's natural instinct would be, oh, hell, you know, heck no, I'm getting rid of it. And they delete it.
Did you just self-edit?
I did self-edit. Yes, I did self-edit.
What is the parent going to say?
No, like, oh, hell no.
Right.
Hell no.
We don't.
Delete.
Right. Because they don't want those pictures anywhere.
Right.
What you don't realize is those pictures have been sent. They're no longer in control. And
right.
In order to try and do some sort of follow-up and investigation, we're going to need to have that as what we call evidence.
Evidence, absolutely. The secondary thing that we see a lot of parents do, which we're going to say is a not good thing, is they will forward those images or videos or messages from their child's device to their own device.
Oh, that's a big no-no.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
That is very, very bad. It is criminal.
Yes. So this is a thing that parents don't often realize until we generally point it out. And then they're kind of dumbfounded going, how did I not think about it this way?
Right.
The nude images of a child under 18 are considered CSAM,
yep,
child sexual abuse material.
A chargeable offense in the state of Texas.
Yes. So the term has been around a long time, and you've probably heard this term. So when you hear us call child sexual abuse material, CSAM, or child exploitation material, you may think of a term that you've heard, child pornography.
Right.
Why and don't that's we use that?
Well, we don't use it because ultimately it's old terminology, really. But it's what's on the books. It's what we have as far as the law goes. I think we discussed this on some level in our introduction episode. And so not to drone on about that again, but it's just we're more educated now than we were. And so we are in the process of, I think, globally trying to transition from that older term of child pornography to CSAM, child sex abuse material.
Because it's so, what it is. It's
yeah.
It's the horrible, brutal sexual abuse of a child. And in this case, what you may not think about is that the nude images of your child
right.
is still considered child exploitative material or
yep.
child sexual abuse material. And so in sending it to your phone in order to get it off of your child's device and be able to show it to police if you call them, you are now forwarding child sexual abuse material onto yeah. your device.
You're complicit.
Which is a criminal offense, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And often what that's going to result in is we have to take both your child's device and your device, and we don't want to have to do that.
Yeah, that also creates lots of problems. I think next on the list of what not to do is do not, under any circumstances, do not engage the suspect. And I mean via phone call, via message, via email, via carrier pigeon, whatever it may be, do not engage that suspect.
So these things go kind of together. We see typically in our experience, we see one response come from a mother who finds it and another response come from a father.
I want to talk about the father one.
You can talk about both of them.
Okay. So if a father uncovers this material, this is the typical response we get. If, say, the communications are via text message, and we'll just keep that very generic, a father will get on there and say something to the effect of, hey, you MF-er, this is a 12-year-old or 13-year-old female's phone, and I am her father, and I'm going to find you, and I'm going to cut your head off, and I'm going to crap down your neck, and I'm going to find you, and I'm going to kill you, and all the other things.
Easy. You've thought about this, haven't you?
Well, I'm just saying I've talked to many fathers who have done this. And so we do not advocate this. We do not want you to do this. While we might agree with you on some level as a parent, as a father,
we understand the reaction.
Absolutely. And so then the flip side of that is when moms find this material. And so when a mother finds that material, it's instinctive for them, I think, to feel that they're going to continue the communications.
To make a case.
To make a case.
We're going to help the police make this yeah. case, and I'm going to pretend to continue being my kid talking to this person.
Yes.
Why are both of those bad ideas?
Well, from the perspective of the threat, clearly you don't want to get yourself in some sort of problematic situation. You don't want to be doing your own research to figure out who the guy is or where he lives and things of that nature. Let the police handle that side.
So let's just point out something. Oftentimes what we find, and this is very common across the board, is kids give out information unknowingly.
Yep.
So a child may accidentally, or they may give out information about themselves, not thinking about this other person, because they may have this relationship and they don't care if this other person knows details about them, or even more so, they may be giving out that information, not realizing how much info they're giving out.
And think of it like this. If your child is taking a selfie to send to someone who they've been in this online communication with, and your child happens to be wearing a school shirt with a mascot on the logo on the front, you know, it's deductive reasoning. It doesn't take an awful stretch for a bad guy to know, well, my person lives in this city, in this state. They have this mascot. I could Google what middle schools have this. Or
we've seen kids really proud of their sports team.
Yeah.
They're at their school or that they're on. And they take a picture in their school or in their sports uniform. And they have a number on it with their name or something like that. And they tell this person, oh, I'm practicing at this place at this time and date.
Right.
And that's just really innocent information that they're giving out to them.
Yeah. Unknowing information they're giving.
But this offender now knows, okay, I'm going to be at this location in this city at this time and date. And I'm looking for the sports jersey with this number.
Right.
And that's my victim. And yeah. The kid gave this information out not knowing. And so if you threaten or you try and make the case, you may be putting your child in more danger because you don't know what has been said before this.
Yeah. And the only other thing I would add to that is what danger it could do is it could, in essence, if the situation is, hey, we're going to help the cops make a better case, that really boils down to you've just provided this subject, this defendant, with an automatic out, an alibi to say, oh, I knew it was an adult the whole time.
Right.
And so we don't ever want that to become the case. And so that's why we would not advocate to, you know, recommunicate on your own.
We've discussed in grooming talk, the offenders are oftentimes having the child delete their messages,
right,
cover their tracks, hide their activities. And in doing so, you may not see just the extent to which the child has given out information, even looking at messages that are still on the phone. You may not see the weeks of communications before that where the child told their name, their birthday, their address, their school, their city, their friends, their where they're going to be. And yes, we don't want that kid. We never want a real child put into danger.
Yeah. And I guess before we hit the very last thing not to do, I think it's warranted for just a minute that we discuss the common sort of theme that seems to be out there right now with vigilante groups. And so, you know, it's a very bad situation. It's a very bad practice. And if you're out there listening and saying, what the heck are you talking about? What are we talking about?
Well, we have individuals, adults, who feel like, well, there's just not enough of the police to do these investigations. So I'm going to go online myself or with a group of people, and we're going to conduct these investigations to stop these internet predators. And we're going to set up meetings, and we're going to put them
shame
on blast,
them.
Shame them or whatever. And it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Don't do it, please.
On a number of levels.
You're hurting a lot of you're actually putting kids at risk by doing that. And we've explained this to people that we've talked to who have done this very thing. What we see is that these vigilante groups don't follow the legal guidelines that we have to. They don't follow the boundaries and the protocols that we have to. And so oftentimes they actually put a real kid at risk.
Yep.
A lot of times they will meet an offender to shame them. And all they've done is made the offender more cautious and more unlikely to meet without getting more nude content or verification from a real kid. So we've prohibited the prosecution of a violent or dangerous offender, and we've made them more
cautious and smarter for the next time they go out to find a real kid.
Yeah, and I think because people who, you know, maybe see the exploits of those vigilante groups, whether it's, you know, through social media or whatever, YouTube, or there is some growing popularity with it. But if you are of the belief that, hey, these groups then turn over this information to the police to make a criminal case, you are very, very mistaken. That does not happen. We are not allowed by our own guidelines and standards to take a vigilante case because we can't prosecute it. It's because of the things that take place that lead up to it. So I just want to add before we give our last do not, and I just emphasize that those vigilante groups do far more harm than they do good. And eventually we'll see in the news where something's going to happen. Somebody's going to get hurt in the process.
And it's just, I know that their intention is, I think I'm helping and I'm trying to protect a kid. What you're doing is you're putting more children at risk. So we don't want to beat this topic to death, but we certainly do have strong feelings about this because we have seen the damage it does. So what's our last do not ever?
Do not ever, ever, ever try to make an arrangement to meet the person on the other end of the line that you've intercepted.
And one of my family members gave this illustration to me. If one kid hits another and the other doesn't reciprocate, then the first is the only one in trouble. Right. So if you start trying to find the person for revenge or to set up a meeting or whatever, then you actually risk becoming part of the case.
Right. And that's not things that you want. Let the system work. I promise whatever jurisdiction you're in, you have very, very capable investigators. And if they don't have someone that specializes like we do, they do have access to us. That's why we're on a task force that we help agencies that maybe don't have the allotted personnel or equipment to do these. And so we assist agencies all the time. So report it to the cops. So we've given you sort of a laundry list of what not to do, and we're not spanking you on the hand. We're just giving you our sound advice of what we see repeatedly. But now we want to tell you like what you should do.
So what do we do?
Well, we make sure that the communications stop. And so how do we do that?
Well, you completely stop communicating with the offender, first of all.
Right.
And then you explain to your child the necessity of this. And like we said earlier, your child or the child in this scenario may have developed feelings or the belief in a serious relationship with this person, depending on how long it's been going on. And as we said before, the grooming process has most likely been taking place. So your child may have been conditioned by this offender to not tell, to believe that your parents are just going to try and keep us apart because they don't know me and know my feelings for you.
Right.
And so obviously the danger is that the child doesn't want to stop these communications. And so one of the pieces of advice I've given to parents in this very circumstance before is you may need to change the Wi-Fi router password. And that way, every other device in the house disconnects from the Wi-Fi or from the internet, and then set it as a protective password for yourself to use and only allow the devices of your child back on to that internet connection for very specific purposes.
And if you're thinking like, well, if I took my kid's phone, which is what our next to do is, I've accomplished that. But think of it like this. If you've got if you got a brand new iPhone, and what did you do with the old one? Did you throw it in a drawer? Because that's what happens at almost every household we've been in where we execute warrants, is a drawer in the kitchen or some junk drawer that's got 6 or 8 or 10 different phones. Well, guess what? Those phones, as long as they charge up or can be connected to a charger, have Wi-Fi capability. So Brandon's advice to tell you maybe you ought to change the Wi-Fi password is probably the most sound advice you can do, because kids are crafty.
Yeah, but we have parents say, but they don't have service on those phones.
Right.
You don't need service on those phones, right?
Correct.
As long as I get Wi-Fi connection, there are many text apps that I can use.
Yep.
Emailing is available. And most of these third-party apps just work on the Wi-Fi connection. Right. I just need the internet.
So think about that junk drawer full of phones if you're ever having to encounter something like this, so that not only do you take your child's most recent device for evidentiary purposes for us, you think about that box of phones or that drawer full of phones, and maybe you might want to put those someplace where they won't remember. Well, I'll show you, because if they take one of them and just leave the house and go to school, which offers them what? Free Wi-Fi or Starbucks or any other number of places,
right?
They could be connecting. And so we don't want to hamper the investigation that way. And so that's why we offer you the advice. But what about the phone they have, Brandon? What do they do with the child's phone that's in their hand?
First of all, we put it in airplane mode.
Right. Why?
Because we want to disconnect it from that internet service so that we can protect what's on there, so that if the child somewhere or the offender somewhere finds a way to delete information, what's on the device is still protected because we can get to it from that way. Right. Now, I will point out that we have seen kids talking to offenders in these cases through other third-party apps. So we're talking about social media platforms and things like that. Now, I know that most parents know this, but just in case you don't think of it in this setting, you've taken away the phone, you've cut off your internet password, you've protected that, and you have taken all of the other devices, so you think, I'm good. Well, what did you forget about? Well, maybe another way to access that third-party application is through some computer at school that they have access to, through a friend's computer or phone. So a lot of times these kids will actually go over to the friend's house and they know, hey, I just need to warn this person that my parents found out. And so I'm going to log into whatever social media platform it is through the browser.
Yep.
And I'm going to get to it through there and delete everything so that my parents don't know what I've been doing. Because a lot of time the kids are just scared of what their parents are going to find.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Or they're embarrassed and, oh, I don't want my parents to find that I've sent these pictures.
Right.
So we also suggest, if you find that they're talking on that social media platform, go in, change the password to one that you know so that you can protect it. And then if you see, you may also want to find out what recovery accounts are associated with that platform, what email accounts are associated, so that if someone tries to recover a password,
right,
that you know that that's going to occur, because you can put forgot password and then they'll email you a link to reset it. And if you don't know what a recovery email that's going to go to, you'll never know. And your kid may be smart enough to know. I'm not going to say maybe. Your kid is definitely smart enough to know that they can recover a password and change it without you knowing.
Right. So now you've gotten to a point where you think you've triaged everything that you can triage. You've cut off passwords. You've taken phones. You've gotten in airplane mode. You feel confident that you have done all that you need to do. So what is the next step?
Call the police.
Call the cops. And now, so there's a number of ways you can do that, depending on where you live and what agency serves you and your location. You could call the non-emergency number, which is oftentimes what this is, even though it seems very paramount in an emergency to you. I don't necessarily know that it dictates a 911 call. So
if you do, there's no shame.
Yeah. I mean, you can do that as well. But if you have the availability and it's not necessarily a 911 call status, why don't you just call the non-emergency number and say, look, I need an officer to come to my house. And an officer will come to your house. In some agencies, you don't have to have the officer come to your house. You could just go to the front desk and probably see an officer in person and start it that way. And in some places, depending on where you live or whatever, you might be able to just call on the phone. Hey, this is what I found out. This is what we've discovered. And you can probably make a report online.
Now, I don't like the online option as well in these cases, because we want to get those phones. We want to get the evidence, those kind of things. We want to determine, is this really an adult offender? Is this a kid their own age? Right. Something like that. So the officer may really need to come out to you.
Yeah. I'm the advocate for that. I say, call a non-emergency number, have the officer respond to your house, explain the situation to them. The officers know what needs to be asked, what needs to be done. They know to secure evidence. They know to bring it to us and contact us. And so if this happens to you, you discover something on a Saturday, and, because we are normally Monday through Friday detectives and we are off on a weekend, it doesn't mean they won't call us or give us a heads up, say, hey, this needs to be looked at right now. And so we will do that.
So another thing we would suggest is to gather as many of the user account names or the passwords as you can.
Yeah.
And why is that?
Well, I can give you two examples. One, let's just say Snapchat. Lots of kids are on Snapchat. And so I'm posing the question to you, the listener. How many of you listeners who have kids who may use Snapchat, how many of you know what the section called My Eyes Only? Have you ever heard of that section, My Eyes Only? And what is that My Eyes Only? My Eyes Only is a section within the Snapchat application, and it's a hidden vault. It's usually a four-digit passcode, number passcode, that is established by the child. It's probably a different passcode than what it used to get into the device itself. But without the passcode, you're not getting in it. If you have the passcode and can get in it, you're probably going to be very, very, very disappointed about what you see that's in there, because it is a vault that allows somebody as a user to store pictures and videos. And
now I know what you're doing. If you have Snapchat on your phone, you may have pulled it up and looked for this My Eyes Only feature. And if you don't see it, you're going, yeah, Tony's lying. These guys are just making this stuff up. It's not in every version.
No.
You know, there are many versions of apps, depending on what version you're on. It can also depend on what platform you're on, whether you're on an Android or an iOS or whatever. So it's not in every version. It certainly is out there. I promise you, we've got the cases and the pictures to prove it. Another thing to keep in mind is that your child may have more than one account. We point this out to a lot of parents. Kids keep the social media platform account for their parents to be able to see. That's the clean one that the kid is okay with their parents being friends with them on and seeing them on. And then they have the only my friends account. And those are very hidden and secretive. And, and so one thing that we like to show is, as an example, Instagram. Right. So if you look down in the bottom right-hand corner, there's a small logo. If you press and hold that, it actually allows the user to go between or switch between two different accounts or more.
Right.
So I can have my parent okay version of the account, and I can have my non-parent okay version on the same device and switch between the two with very little effort. Yeah. The same is true of Facebook, right?
Yep.
Now, most kids you'll find are not on Facebook except for maybe the Messenger section, but you can log in and out of Facebook and switch between accounts very easily. And have more than one account on the device.
Yeah, on Instagram, you know, their normal parent Instagram is called Instagram.
Yes.
Their fake one is called Finstagram.
Right?
Fake Instagram. So
these social media platforms, there are a lot of them that have that. There are also a lot of hidden apps that are available on phones so that you can lock the app and hold your photos that are not safe for parent eyes. And videos of that same thing on there as well. And then lastly, what do we want to talk about? We want to talk about reporting to the social media platform.
Right.
So I think we discussed it in our introduction episode.
A little bit, I think we did.
Yeah, these internet service providers or these social media platforms have mandatory reporting guidelines under federal law.
Right.
And those mandatory reporting guidelines basically tell these platforms that if they find evidence of child exploitation or some sort of abuse of a child or exploitation of a child, they report it to NCMEC, which is
National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
And NCMEC takes these reports from these social media providers and it reviews them, and then it sends them out to task forces across the country based on where the abuse is occurring. Through the location data. And then those task forces send them out to their affiliate agencies that are tasked with investigating these crimes. And so we get these, they're called cyber tips.
Yep.
And talk about cyber tips briefly, Tony.
Yeah, cyber tips are a mechanism, like Brandon said, that allows internet service providers to report nefarious activity on their servers through NCMEC. And usually, it just depends on the frequency of when they come in. They're mandated to report it no matter what, especially when it involves a child or a child exploitation matter. And so in theory, if a bad guy lives in North Texas and the one of the victim childs lives in New York, a cyber tips is likely going to be sent to Texas and New York. And then between those two investigators, they'll make some determination of, hey, do we have an offense? If we do, what do we have or what can we do? Or, you know, we sort of work together collectively to come up with some sort of game plan on how to kind of resolve that matter.
So let's discuss the pros and the cons of the reporting. Now, I will always advocate for reporting to the social media platform. In fact, most of the time we've instructed officers at local agencies to tell parents how to make those reports on the social media platform, even if it's going to be investigated by the local agency, because the social media platform can often see all of the accounts that the offender may be using. They get to see the behind the scenes information, a lot of the log data and the IP data and things like that. So they have a lot more, information at their fingertips than we would.
They do.
And they can they deactivate accounts. They can send it into with the cyber tip to NCMEC. Now, deactivation of the accounts. Talk about what's good and bad about that.
Yeah, there's definitely some pros and cons with that. In the arena that we're discussing, where, you know, this is a reactive case, you as the parent have discovered this material between your child and this supposed adult offender, and you do the right things. You report it through the platform, which gets the accounts flagged, including your child's account and the subject's account. And so as the provider, I would say 9 out of 10 times, they're going to automatically deactivate those accounts for a violation of terms of service on their individual platform. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it goes away, because like Brandon said, it'll get sent to us and whatnot. But the downside for us on the investigative side is that might just be the tip off that subject needs to know, whoa, I need to slow it down. I need to get rid of everything else. Now, historically, these guys aren't rocket scientists, and so they're not the brightest bulbs in the box.
Now we're going to have a case with a rocket scientist in the future. Probably, just because you said it.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you get that one.
Okay. But we're always advocating for reporting, even if the deactivation of the account occurs. Most of the time they're not thinking about what that means. They just think, oh, I'll have to create another one. So I think the pros outweigh the cons to that.
Yeah.
I certainly think the report to the social media site helps us more than it hinders us.
There could be a bit of a delay, though. That might be the only other con that I see, is if you flag those accounts on the platform and they get deactivated and it automatically kicks in the cyber tip that will be generated, it's not like we as the investigators are going to get that cyber tip, you know, 5 hours later, 6 hours later. It may take some time. It could take a day or two or three, or sometimes it could take a week.
Now, we do have both scenarios, though, where they have activated a sort of an emergency cyber tip, and they send it in as a high priority and we get it very quickly.
Sure.
Or we have had a local report made and we start investigating, and then we get a cyber tip 3 weeks later about this thing. And so it never seems to hurt anything.
So I think the adage is, don't stop at one. Like, unless the only one you're going to make is to the police agency where you live, that's, in a best case scenario, you should always do that. If you decide you're going to try to do, you know, the reporting through the system, that's fine, but you should also maybe follow that with an information report or something to the local agency, so that those investigators kind of have the heads up. Oh, hey, you were proactive. Not only did you find it, but you reported it, and now it's going to become a cyber tip.
So what do they expect when they call and report something like this, Tony?
Well, it's going to depend on the agency that comes to see you. And so if an officer responds to your house, a number of things can happen. One, if the officer works for an agency of any sizable nature and has gotten any sort of advice or tips from guys like Brandon and I, who work these cases all the time. And so we're constantly pushing information out through our patrol officers so that, one, they're educated. Two, they're able to pass that information along to you as the parent who's discovered something. So they may walk through that entire process that we just explained to you as far as like how to report it through the platform.
And that may be enough. That may be something where they see the context and the nature of the communications, and that may be all that they do.
Right.
So don't be surprised. This is not certainly what's going to happen. These are just things that may happen. But
right.
But don't be surprised if that happens. Don't be surprised if they say we must seize the device's evidence.
Right.
We'll give you the warning if you forward it onto your device in order to protect your kid's device. Your device is probably likely to be seized as well because it now contains that same evidence. And if right. we leave it there with those nude images of a child, then
yeah, we can't do that.
We can't do it. Right.
Yeah, we cannot do that. I guess the thing I want to make sure that folks listening understand is that we are at the mercy of our jurisdiction. We're at the mercy of our geographical area.
Limitations
in that. So what that means is, and maybe you have a kid out there who's kind of a gamer. And we see a lot of kids who are using an app called Discord, right? And Discord has generated its fair share of questionable things that have taken place. But the more common thing we're seeing, or at least with more frequency than not, is our offenders that we identify are sometimes far away.
Around the world.
Yeah. They're like in, you know, Russia or Germany or wherever.
Discord has its good as well. Discord is a server. A lot of game talk about it, but other things, non-gaming, are on there. So don't take that to mean that that's the only thing that happens on there. It's just like with everything. We see, I guess, a perversion of sorts where these offenders take something that has a good intent and purpose, and they pervert it and twist it into bad, right?
But where I wanted to kind of make sure to reiterate is if we determine that an offense has taken place involving a subject who is determined to be in, you know, Bangladesh, we're not getting on a plane and going to Bangladesh as nice as that might be.
Or we not. Haven't convinced them to send us yet.
No, there's no budget for that.
So your case may be suspended if we can't find the suspects or if they aren't local to our jurisdiction. And that may not even be our choice. That may be the choice of people above us or prosecutor input or things like that from many different sources that we have to consider. Right. Another time where your case may be suspended is if we do, in fact, find out that that suspect is a juvenile or the same age as your child.
Yeah.
Because although it may not be something you want to see happening, our laws are designed so as to not necessarily prosecute kids of a certain age for certain conduct or behavior.
Right.
So sometimes we're limited there.
Yeah. We're not looking to make kids sex offenders. That's not our goal.
And what may happen to the device at the end of the
case? This is probably the biggest question we get because obviously keeping in context the scenario we gave you of what was found and the types of imagery that was discovered, that phone gets turned over for a forensic examination through consent and that takes place. And then the big bomb comes of when do we get that phone back? I'm paying on that iPhone 11 and we're still paying on it. We don't have the phone. And here's the downside. We can't give you the phone back with contraband on it.
What's contraband in this case?
The nude images of said child that were discovered.
Yes.
And so it creates a couple of scenarios, one of which is?
We have to reset the device.
Including what?
Not just the phone. We have to reset the iCloud or the cloud account associated with the device.
And why? Why would we have to reset the cloud account?
Because we find oftentimes these phones are backed up to a cloud account. Now, I said iCloud, but it could be any cloud account.
Right.
And that backup may contain these images. And if we give you the device and then you just restore the phone with that backup, now they're back on there and we're back to square one. Nor do we want you to have those in the cloud backup. Because guess what? Those cloud accounts are tied to an internet or an internet service provider or an electronic service provider, and they may have to submit those pictures as a cyber tip.
Right. And so we're not trying to perpetuate the problem. So at least where I'm employed, it's a separate consent form that you have options. Option one is we don't need that phone back. You can have it. Good luck. Thank you. Good riddance. Then my child will never have another phone again. And so in those instances, if we have no prosecution to hold that as evidence, that phone will probably be given to our bomb unit, who then over some course of time, when they have a whole collection of electronics, they blow them up into about 1 bazillion pieces. I witnessed it once. It was very cool. Very loud, but very cool. And then the secondary option for us is you as the owner of that device, who's paying on that device, can sign a consent form that authorizes the wiping of that device, the factory reset of that device, including the cloud account, and then we give it back.
So one other thing we would be remiss if we didn't discuss in this kind of topic is sextortion.
Yeah.
And we spoke about that in the introductory episode. We talked about the blackmailing or coercion of a child with these pictures. The term that we use when this is talked about is called sextortion.
Right.
It's certainly not new. It's seen a rise in the last few years as far as the number of cases we've seen. But let's talk about sextortion. So an offender that gets a nude image of a child, we see this quite a bit where they'll actually turn around and try and use those photos against the child to get more or to get something else. So we see them say, I'm going to send these images to your parents or to your family or to your friends or your school or your church or whatever is most frightening for this kid. And if you don't send me more, or if you don't send me money, or if you don't send me whatever they're after,
or if you don't meet me in person.
Yes.
I have a case just like that. And that worked.
Yeah. Or if you don't do more.
Yeah.
And often that's what we see as an escalation of the activities that they're being requested to do based on the sextortion. So what do you do if that's the case? Well, first of all, we say do not send more images.
Right.
Do not pay anything. These images of your child sent to an offender, like we said, it's a sad, unfortunate fact, but we are no longer able to get those back sometimes.
No.
Hopefully, in a best case scenario, the offender is the only person who has these. And once we track them down, we can get those and maybe stop the circulation of those. But likely and oftentimes what we see is those offenders send those out to other offenders. And so we are limited in our response in how we get those back. Yeah. But certainly sending more or paying or something like that does not help you get those back.
Yeah. No matter how much they promise or say, you know, this is what will happen. That's all part of the extortion part of it. And so don't fall prey to that.
Yeah. We see these tactics used to coerce. We see the pretending to be a child and, hey, I'll send you a picture if you'll send me a picture. And they'll often find some picture, or they have a picture that another child sent to them and they'll send it on, and then they'll turn against the kid and start using those. They'll offer something like money or something in exchange for those things, or they pretend to be a modeling agency. That's been a really popular one. Right. Like, send me your pictures because I'm going to make you famous. And the kid just doesn't know that this is just a ploy to get these things.
The secretly recording is a kind of, we're seeing that's on the uptick. If you think, for example, of like Skype, I see a lot of Skype related cases like this where two people are doing a live video connection through Skype or Viber or one of the other, you know, video platforms. And on one side of the communications, it's being recorded. And so when there's this tit for tat, you do this, I'll do this, you show this, I'll show this, you know, you make this video, I'll make this video. And when that, happens and it's being recorded, as soon as that recording is captured is when the sextortion part kicks in. Okay, now that I have this, guess what? I'm going to put this on your mom and dad's Facebook page unless you pay me $200 cash through Cash App.
And think about it. As a kid, you are being like this person who is really nice to you now turns really aggressively mean to you. And you are in fear of maybe getting hurt or for sure shamed.
Yeah.
And you now, like, the fear sets in of what have I done? And I can't tell anyone about this. So a lot of the statistics that we're seeing is that a
a lot of the victims try to handle this themselves.
They do.
And then they send more, and we find that statistically, we still see the sextortion continue. So the victim feels even more trapped. They tried to handle it. It didn't stop. It's gotten worse.
Right.
And now they're stuck. And so, really, I guess the takeaway for this for parents is to start having these conversations with your kids now.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, you have to be very intentional about it. And, I mean, you got to lean in. That's what it is, because our kids nowadays are just face planted into their screens, and even there's parents that are just as bad.
Yeah.
You know, like
the stats say 1 in 3 victims never tell anyone because of shame embarrassment.
Yeah.
That's so an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. They say that old adage.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Here's my way of thinking about it. And you've probably heard this now. We've said it a few times in different places. I link it up to, or think about it as a parent who tells their kid to brush their teeth. You start telling your child at 3 or 4 years old, we're going to show you how to brush your teeth. Maybe even before that, we're going to brush your teeth for you. Then we're going to show you how to brush your teeth. And then you start reminding that child every day, hey, did you brush your teeth? Hey, brush your teeth tonight before you go to bed. I'm going to check your toothbrush. You know, and that continues, right? You ask your kids every, did you brush your teeth yet? Okay, you got to get in bed. Did you brush your teeth yet? When they're into their 13, 14 year old age, you know, it's like, ah, I know you didn't brush your teeth. Breath stinks. And so that talk, I mean, that's something really trivial and simple. And we hear parents saying that from the time their kids are 4 until they're, you know, in their teen years.
Right.
Why don't we do the same with this kind of stuff, right? Why don't we start talking to kids about the dangers? We used to hear parents tell kids about the creepy person in the van at the end of the street. Well, guess what? That person is now coming into your child's bedroom through the internet.
Right.
Unrestricted.
Yeah. Unfettered access.
And so you have to have that talk frequently. You have to have it routinely. Your kid has to know, hey, mom and dad are always talking about this. And, you know, that way they're aware that this exists and what to do and what not to do. Right. And then also let them know, just like with anything else, hey, if you do something that makes a mistake, there's no shame. Come to me.
Tell me.
Because there's no reason for the kid to have to feel like they are too ashamed or too embarrassed to come to you with something that's happened.
Right. Just some other, just before we kind of come to a close, I guess just a few other things I would think listeners would want from a practical perspective might be, and it was mentioned earlier, but how about maybe have a specific password for your child's account that might have some limitations. Okay, between these hours and these hours, it works. Between the hours of when they should be asleep, it doesn't work. They can't get on. So it has some restrictions, and you can do that, you know, one through your router if you need assistance. So there's lots of resources out there to show you how to do that. And also, I would say, try the best you can to be restrictive with the amount of time that they're spending, because they're on it all day, every day. We're in this COVID environment where it's encouraged, because everybody that's in school right now is on every device that they possibly can 24/7, just about. So restrict a little bit of that time.
The other thing is to set some parental controls on your child's device. Now, there are apps, and you'll see on our website, catfishcops.com, we have some resources for parents and some apps that can help. We don't necessarily promote one over the other.
No.
We just let you know that they're out there. And there are apps that will monitor internet usage. You can limit the amount of time or what's being done. You can restrict the content and the age range. But also another thing that I think Tony and I have done for our own kids sometimes is setting parent controls on their device itself.
Yeah.
So you can put locks on or passcodes onto devices where you limit the internet or the camera. You can actually disable the camera on devices with a password. I've just done quick, simple searches on the internet, and you can find parental controls for iOS and Android.
Yeah.
So they're both available. We'll put a couple of those resources and maybe some of the links to those articles on the show details for this podcast episode.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, as we sort of bring this to a close, I know that inherently there's, you know, folks that are listening. They're like, well, what about this? What do I do with this? What do I do with that? And lots of probably very, very good questions. I know we sort of gave a very broad stroke of the brush in regards to the what to do, what not to do, but we know inherently that there's questions we probably didn't get to. So if there's a question, please, please, please reach out to us. You can go through our website. There's a subscribe button. If you put an email address in there, you can contact us. It'll send us an email.
You can inbox us on our social media platforms.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just ask anywhere you can. Get to us. Send us a question. What we're going to start doing on future episodes is we're going to talk about topics that people want to hear as well.
Yep.
As well as our case studies. And we're also going to answer those questions. So if you want to have your question asked in an episode, send it to us. Let us know whether you want your name mentioned or not mentioned. Some people are very specific about,
sure,
please don't mention my name. But if you have a question, we'd love to talk about it. And you know what? It may actually be a question that someone else has, most likely is, or it may be something that someone hasn't thought about and may be able to help their kids by answering the question for them.
Yeah, without a doubt. So that was a lot, but thank you. I just want to extend our deepest gratitude to all of you that have been listening. We've been getting good, really good positive feedback. We're seeing lots of people downloading the episodes, so we're super stoked. We're kind of wondering why we didn't start this a few years ago, but nonetheless, we're here now. So
we're here now. If you're listening to us on Apple, on Spotify, on Google, Amazon, anywhere you're listening to us, please give us a 5-star rating, review us. Even if it's bad, we'll take the constructive criticism. If you have a question, send it to us through our website. Visit our website. We've got a lot of interesting stuff on there, and we hope to add a bunch more. And look for us on all the social media platforms.
Yeah.
We're available. And we look forward to talking to you soon.